On ABC Radio Brisbane, Steve Austin.
How would you feel if I told you your financial situation isn't just determined by what you're earning or what's in your bank account? That part of your finances are being determined by data, what's called big data, information being collected about you from a number of sources. I've spoken a lot about in the last 3-4 years about digital disruption, and my guest Paul Wallbank knows about more about digital disruption than probably anyone that I've read. He's got a great website called Decoding the New Economy, Society and Business in the 21st Century. Paul, good to speak to you. I've been reading you for a while.
Thanks very much, Steve. It's a pleasure to be on.
What kind of data are you referring to that's being collected continually about me?
Well, it's pretty well everything. Pretty well any financial process that you do, applying for a credit card, using a store loyalty card, applying for a home loan, even your internet usage now is being tracked and used to determine your credit worthiness and various other things too.
How? I thought only the government was lawfully allowed to keep metadata. So every time I go to Motor Guzzi Motorcycles or something, how is that influencing financial data?
Well, really what happens is that when you agree to, say, use a store loyalty card, you'll see that little box at the bottom you tick that you agree to share things. Usually it's pre-ticked for you.
And so how helpful.
Indeed. And we've seen this extend to all of the internet services. So when you sign up to Facebook or Twitter or any of those services, part of the user agreement is that you allow your data to be shared with other parties. So they're drilling down into it. Now, Facebook, obviously, because they want to sell you lots of stuff.
So everyone's using my metadata.
Yes. Well, this isn't metadata. We should probably clear that up. The metadata is just the information around the actual data that you put there. This is using the actual data. So what you're posting, pictures of your cat, might be used to sell your cat food, for instance. And interestingly, the tax office, when I was speaking to them about it, they are probably the most aggressive of all the users. But the commercial sector, the big companies, big multinationals like Experian, they're in there too, using all of that day-to-day data that we collected.
Big data is a bit of a phrase, and there's a few books out there now about big data and how companies can use it. You say that big data is difficult to get right. Tell me why.
Well, it's a lot of people say data is the new oil, and what they miss with that is that oil is a really messy thing to deal with. It's toxic, it's difficult to use properly, difficult to distill, and that's the same with data. What happens with a lot of this data that comes into the system is that it's not clean, if you like. In fact, I saw an interesting presentation by Woodside, the West Australian oil and gas company, the other day, where they were talking about the data that they use for oil and gas exploration in the Northwest Shelf. And they said that the cleaning this data up is a real problem. Now, when it comes to people, it's even harder than, say, that geological data or industrial data that big companies, big industrial companies are collecting. When it's you or me, we might post a picture of a cat, but it might be a friend's cat. But all of a sudden, we're labelled as cat lovers by, say, Facebook or something like that.
I'm talking with Paul Wallbank. Paul is a technology writer and speaker. He's got a ripping blog at paulwallbank.com. It's called Decoding the New Economy. It keeps a pretty eclectic collection of material, which is quite fascinating. Paul, tell me about insurance companies. There's a multiple insurance companies in Australia, but I understand they're actually, most of them are owned by two or three majors. They've just got different names under their umbrella. So tell me what insurance companies are doing.
Yeah, that's true. And what they're doing is, so they collect all manner of things. So for your home and contents insurance or house insurance, they'll be collecting things like local council data, flood data, meteorological data, all of those things, looking at the weather patterns. And then also looking, if you make a claim on them, they'll often be looking at things like your social media accounts and so on. So if you've been posting on Instagram that you've just bought yourself a shiny new camera or something like that, they may well be taking that into consideration when they're making your insurance assessment. So there's a whole range of things they do there. And of course, with things like determining your insurance premiums, they will definitely be looking at your credit rating and a lot of the things that have gone on in the background, your purchase patterns and that sort of thing, to determine whether you're a safe risk to insure.
When can they cross-share this? So we know there's credit agencies, credit reference agencies.
Yep.
When can they share their data? Can insurance companies share data with other companies? Do they on-sell it?
Generally, no. The insurance companies themselves don't. But what they do is they subscribe to those big companies like Experian and all the credit rating agencies and so on. So they're getting that from a common source as well. And that could be your Woolies and Coles loyalty cards. It could be your Qantas, Virgin, those sort of loyalty cards. The loyalty cards themselves have been really big business over the last 25 years. And that's the real reason, is to collect that consumer data so they can share it across the different groups. And again, the government agencies use these as well, particularly the tax office.
Tell me about the tax office. What are they doing? I'm almost frightened to ask.
They're pretty well doing everything.
Right.
They're probably the longest standing data miner in Australia. So they really started this in the 1930s when income tax first came along, the federal level. So they've been doing this, collecting your bank account details right back from the 1930s. But from the 70s onwards, they discovered the world of computers, and they've been pulling together more and more information on this. So they will be accessing those same commercial services as those loyalty cards and so on, but they'll also have all of their power behind them as well for your tax return and what your employer's putting in as well.
I was surprised to learn that nearly every mobile phone app on my smartphone is actually feeding data back to someone, and that you have to actually delete or not use some apps. So, you know, that a lot of them don't give you any consent. But have you had much of a look at mobile phone apps? Because apparently they're all feeding data to someone, or someone's buying it.
Yes, and this has been an ongoing problem for a long time. And there's this saying in the internet industry that if you're not paying for it, then you're the product. And again, these free apps.
I hadn't heard that. That's very good.
Yeah. So when you use Facebook and Twitter and that, we're the raw material of the sausage machine. And a lot of those apps that you're using are consolidating that data and putting it. The real concern is, how anonymized is this? And with a lot of these apps, we don't really know, because we don't know what sort of security is in the background there. It's one of the reasons why you should be very, very careful about putting credit card details and that information into this, and probably better to be linking it into things like your App Store or the Play Store on the Android phones, rather than giving your credit card details or anything personal like that. But definitely any of that information you're posting or putting into an app, you can guarantee that that's being logged as well. And of course, you go back to the metadata. That is some of the metadata that is being saved. Where were you and what were you using at the time? That is part of what's being collected by the government.
And because you have that smartphone, you're also being geolocated at every moment of your life.
Exactly right. Even if you turn off the geolocation settings, it's still possible for you to be tracked with those phones. So, you are. If you've got a smartphone in your pocket, you can assume that it is possible for someone to track you.
That's why someone like Edward Snowden, who blew the whistle on the National Security Agency in the United States, whenever he met journos, he demanded that they got their phone, turned it off, and stuck it in the freezer.
Exactly right, yeah, and leave it in the freezer at the hotel, in the fridge at the hotel room.
That's right.
Rather than take it with them. So, and that sort of paranoia, if you're in that position, is well justified too. There's been some really interesting stories in recent times on how to become anonymous in the connected world, but it's not for the faint-hearted, and it's not particularly easy if you're trying to do business or keep in contact with the family and so on.
What happens when it goes wrong, Paul? Is there a story you can tell of when? So this is big data. It's just, I hate it, but it's that's the way it is. So what happens when it goes wrong?
Well, probably the best example, and this is a fairly old example, is Target in the United States, where what they were looking at was people's browsing histories. And one girl, a teenager, she was pregnant and was looking at that sort of thing. So Target sent out a whole bunch of direct mail about, hey, you're having a baby. And she hadn't told her parents, so there was a less than impressed
the famous
father.
Case.
Yes. Yeah. So that's probably the first one that comes to mind there. But this is an almost daily thing now, and this is something that we have to be very careful of with the data that is collected. Now, under the privacy rules here in Australia, we can ask these services, what do you have on us? And we do have the right to find that and then correct the issue.
So how do we do that? I'd love to do that one day. I'd love to go to some of these big companies that hold massive data stores and say, okay, I want to see what you've got on me. How do I do that?
So you go directly to their websites, and they will have a link there that you can go. By law, you can go there, you can ask them, what do you have on me? And they will send you back a telephone book worth of information. In fact, you can do it with Facebook as well. You can go in and ask for your entire history there and what they've got on you.
So they're required to by law. What Australian law are they required to do that? Because
Here in Australia, it's the Privacy Act. So you've got the National Privacy Principles, and that's one of them, that you have the right to see what information's being held and have it. There's an interesting case from a Sydney journalist a year back where what Ben tried to do was get his metadata out of Telstra, and it turned out the courts ruled that the metadata isn't actually personally identifiable information, which is what the Privacy Act covers, which is kind of weird, because the whole idea of collecting our metadata is to track us if we've done something wrong. So that court decision baffled a few of us there. But
Did you get to the bottom of it?
No, he lost the court case, so so he wasn't able to see the metadata that Telstra were saving on him. But for the private services, they will turn that information over to you. The Facebook, because they're not an Australian-based company, they don't have to do it, but they do. So in the settings, there is a setting where you can ask for your personal data, and after a day or two, you will get a huge PDF file with pretty well everything that you visited, liked, shared, whatever. It's quite freaky when you look at it, just the sheer volume of information there is on you as an individual.
My guest is Paul Wallbank, technology writer and speaker. He blogs at paulwallbank.com. All right, Paul, what do you do? Yeah, what precautions do you take? You know all this stuff. You know the terrifying reality. So what do you do to protect yourself, your blog, your browsing history?
Really, I've given up on it, because it's I just assume it's out there, and all my foibles and vices are there in somebody's record, and if they choose to share it publicly, I'm just going to have to wear it. It is really hard, particularly if you're in a position of where you're in the public eye, so whether you're a politician or you're in the media or whatever, you can be pretty sure that this stuff's out there. So it's really hard to keep it private and operate in the industry. It's so I just take the attitude that we just keep it out there. You do the usual things of not sharing too many personal things. So keep the kids' names out of things. Keep a lot of the locations you go to a lot out of the public eye. But again, if people want to find that, they probably can extrapolate it pretty easily out of all of that information.
I've just finished reading Michael Lewis's book, Flash Boys, about high-frequency trading on stock markets. And one of the things that came out of that was that some of the less reputable banks, most of them, and some of the less reputable traders in Wall Street, most of them, were gaming the system. In other words, they could afford the best technology and the best code writers, they worked out how to game the system. Is our system being gamed? This data collection system, is it being gamed? Have you seen any evidence of that?
Any system that's collecting data like that, the whole point of collecting it is to game the system, so to give you an advantage over the other guy. So, and look, we see this in energy markets, we see it in the stock market, that high-frequency trading happens here, but nowhere near to the same degree. But all of these things, any information that's being collected, it is there. So your personal information being collected by that store card, that is an advantage that store sees in being able to sell things to you and get more money out of your pocket. So system, by definition, things are going to get gamed when you're collecting this data. That's just the nature of the beast.
Do you see a problem coming with this ever-increasing amount of big data? At some point, all it's going to take is one little glitch, you know, a dot, a dash in the wrong place, and hey, presto, with that massive amount of big data, something's going to go wrong?
Well, things have been going wrong already. We've had a lot of data breaches. So Sony had the massive breach. In the United States, the Office of Personnel Management, which looks after all the security clearances, was breached a couple of years ago. So pretty well anybody with a security clearance in the US government, that data is out there. And you can be pretty sure the Russians and the Chinese and everyone else that is interested in those things has it. So there's a lot of risks in big data, and that's why I come back to it being like oil, that handling oil is difficult and handling data is difficult. But these problems are real, and I get a bit narky about this because I think we need to be throwing a few directors of these companies that make these mistakes in jail before these companies are really going to start taking data privacy and security seriously.
Who would you start with? Who would you throw in jail first, Paul?
The next big breach, I think, unfortunately, under Australian law, you can't do it. But fines are just proving not enough. So, if I was dictator for a day, that's probably one of the laws that I would put in, so that people would start. Because I really think that a lot of organisations, both government organisations and private sector, aren't taking the security of their data seriously enough, and certainly the effects of what that does to individuals. So your passwords get leaked, that sort of thing. That becomes a major problem. And with these biometrics that are coming in, where they're looking at your fingerprint or your iris, your eye, that sort of thing, if that information starts getting out, you can change your password, but you can't change your biometrics. And if that information starts leaking out, we're going to have a real problem with identity. And so we really have to start taking this a lot seriously. But that's not in the hands of the average consumer. So most of the listeners can't do much about that.
Who's going to be using biometric data? When I flew into Japan a few years ago, they took a photo of my iris.
Yep.
Who's going to be using photometric data?
Well,
Yeah,
if you're travelling a lot at the moment, you'll be getting that every time you go through one of the smart gates at the airports now. Certainly when you go into the US, you're asked to put your fingerprints and look into the camera there. So they're taking all of that data together. You're increasingly seeing recognition systems too. This is one of the big areas that shopping centres and so on are starting to use. At the moment, they tend to use the more for anonymous reasons, to just see where the traffic is, where most of the people are, the crowds in one area and not in another, that sort of thing. But increasingly, the resolution on these cameras and the artificial intelligence in the systems is getting so good that they can track you through a shopping centre. So you're increasingly going to see these coming into daily use. So it's pretty well there.
So big data is being gathered, stored, and algorithms are making decisions about what form it's spat out in.
Exactly right. And those algorithms, this is where it gets... So the whole Centrelink debacle is the word I would use for it. I mean, that is a classic case of a specifically designed algorithm that you could argue that the consequences of it were actually... It's actually working to what it was intended to do. But that's what you see when you have a formula there that is designed to spit something out that may not be in everyone's best interest. But certainly what we're going to see increasingly with these algorithms, so an algorithm is just a formula, but increasingly we're going to see artificial intelligence, which doesn't use those formulas but makes the stuff up as it goes because it's the system's actually thinking. We'll probably start seeing some mistakes being made there. So these are the sort of things that we need to be watching for.
Is the system going to start thinking for itself?
Skynet becomes active and the Terminator comes out. This is the sort of thing that a lot of people are thinking about on this. And the artificial intelligence side of it, there are a whole group of people, particularly in Silicon Valley, who are really concerned about this and are trying to get a code of conduct and standards around artificial intelligence so that we don't start having the machines going rogue on us. But that's hopefully a little way off yet. But we are increasingly seeing on a small level these computer programs, computer systems thinking for themselves. And that's one of the big areas that we're going to see a lot more, particularly going back to the financial services. This is probably going to put the mortgage brokers and those industries out of business because the machines can do it, can evaluate whether we can get a mortgage or not.
So you slipped something in there. So the systems are thinking for themselves. Which ones?
Yep. Oh, there's a whole range of them. Artificial intelligence, this is one of the big buzzwords in the IT, in the tech sector at the moment, and how we apply that artificial intelligence to a whole range of things, financial technologies, fintech, as they call it. This is one of the big areas where they're looking at taking all of that big data about us, feeding it into a machine, and the machine decides whether you're fit for credit or not. And that system tends to learn. So if it makes a few mistakes, it gives me some money and realizes that I'm a bad debt later, then gives you some money and knows that you're a good payer. So it learns that to give you more money and give me less money. And that's on the, and it will be doing that. We're increasingly seeing that happening on, say, regional levels or particular occupations as circumstances change.
You know, Paul, the more I speak with people like you, the more nervous I get.
Yeah, it's...
I didn't want to know half the stuff they told me.
Well, this is... and, I mean, this is why we have to be vigilant about this sort of stuff, because, I look at this like when the motor car came out, say, 100, 120 years ago, there was a lot of upsides with it, but, gee whiz, a lot of people got hurt as the motor cars were being rolled out.
Yes,
so,
yes.
So, yeah, and this is exactly the same thing. Whenever you get a new new technologies rolled out, we make a lot of mistakes with them.
You've been very generous with your time. Thanks very much.
My pleasure, Steve.
Paul Wallbank. You can read more from Paul on paulwallbank.com. He writes about the future, technology, science, and the odd eclectic topic.
Steve Austin on ABC Radio Brisbane.